This is Kevin Conroy, the voice of Batman. And you're listening to the DCAU Review, hosted by Cal and Liam, streaming at DCAUReview.com and on your favorite podcast app.
Get charged up for action that'll shock your system.
Tell me that's not cool.
An unstoppable superhero and his crew embark on impossible missions and will bring mutated villains to justice.
When static's in the house, bad guys better step off.
Pull the plug on crime with the adventures of Static Shock. Yeah!
This episode is brought to you by FX's The Veil, starring Elizabeth Moss. FX's The Veil is an international spy thriller that follows two women as they play a deadly game of truth and lies on the road from Istanbul to Paris and London. One woman has a secret, and the other has a mission to reveal it before thousands of lives are lost. FX's The Veil premieres April 30th, only on Hulu.
Welcome, everybody, to episode 295 of the DCAU Review. I am one of your hosts, Cal, and with me, my good friend, good brother, the man that runs all of our social media accounts, it's Liam. Liam, we have turned the page here with a new month after celebrating the 25th anniversary of Batman Beyond for the first time of what I assume will be many times this year. last month, we encourage you to check that out if you didn't get a chance. We did a couple of episode reviews as well as a dual spotlight episode last week that's worth checking out if you haven't done so already. But this week, Liam, we are back, as we always say, in the sunny skies of Dakota as we continue with a month of Static Shock reviews, and we kick things off this month with a memorable episode for a lot of reasons, one that goes down, and I have a feeling will be quite divisive, both for our listeners and quite possibly for us, based on our rankings here.
That's right. So as you mentioned, we're doing Static Shock all month long. And we're kicking off. We were looking over episodes we haven't done because, of course, with Static, we don't necessarily go in order, episode order. So we were looking around. We saw, hey, we only have one season two episode left. And it happens to be a very famous episode of the series. Maybe second only to Richie Stat as a Racist episode.
Mm-hmm.
As far as episodes that people talk about when they talk about the show. And that is, of course, the episode Jimmy, which, as we'll get into in a moment here, it's the gun violence episode.
That's right. It is very much teetering on the edutainment or very special episode, depending on however you want to call it, of the show. But we will, of course, break things down with our plot synopsis and our four categories here in just a moment. But before we do, we'll let you know that this episode originally debuted on the Kids WB here in the United States on May the 4th. Hey, there's something to that. That sounds like Star Wars 2002.
I recognize.
That means, of course, that this episode debuted coming up on the 22-year anniversary of this episode's original air date. And of course, if you would like to support the podcast that you're currently listening to, we invite you to leave a 5-star review with a little bit of a blurb on Apple Podcasts. They let you type in and give you like a word for word paragraph review of what you like about the podcast. If you want to support us that way and you live in the continental United States, if we read your review on the air, we will send you a little gift as a thank you. So make sure if you're not familiar with that process or you haven't done so yet, stop the episode right now and go do that. But also, we will let you know that this episode is brought to you by The Pod Tower. Head over to youtube.com/The Pod Tower today. That's one of the other platforms where you can listen to every single episode of the DCAU Review. Not only can you listen to every episode of our podcast ever released there, but you will also get every episode of the Tim Talk podcast, which covered all of the DCAU, as well as the ongoing podcast, Jump on the Batwagon, from our friends at Watchtower Database. And it's all in one convenient hub. That's youtube.com/thepodtower. Head over today and subscribe.
That's right. So this is the synopsis for Jimmy, which is written by Alan Burnett and Dwayne McDuffie, directed by Joe Sikta, with music by Richard Wolf, and animation by Tama Production Company. And that synopsis reads as such. Virgil befriends a bullied student named Jimmy, whose torment may get the best of him.
Okay.
It's not inaccurate.
Yeah.
It's just lacking detail, but
it's kind of burying the lead a little bit, but you hit some of the highlights there.
That's right. So as we jump into the plot here, it kicks off. This whole episode is kind of told in flashback, which I certainly didn't remember. as we see, we open with Richie being carried out on a stretcher into an ambulance, with Virgil's father going with Richie in the ambulance, and Virgil being told to stay behind. Then we cut to Virgil in what appears to be the school psychologist's office, as he begins to recount the details of what led up to this fateful day. And
Virgil, you still with me?
Yeah, I just can't stop thinking about, what happened.
Why don't you sit? We can talk about it.
I never talked to a psychologist before. Feels kind of weird.
I understand, but let's give it a try. I promise I won't bite. I'd like to help you sort through some of your feelings, Virgil. You've had a traumatic experience.
That's what my father said. He's a social worker. He also said there's no way I could have stopped it from happening. I'm not so sure about that.
How well do you know Jimmy?
Not too well. Nobody does. Maybe that was a problem.
It kicks off with Virgil in class. He was a little bit late because he was fighting. And this is one of those stressful moments for me, because this episode deals with very serious topics. It's a problem that obviously you don't, if you live in America, this is something you kind of have to think about constantly. Mm-hmm. So I want to give the respect to that, to this topic, but also it's Carmadillo.
He's back, baby.
The best. I was so excited when I saw Carmadillo was in this episode.
Heads up, hotshot.
This is how we roll. Go, go.
Hey, Sparky, I've been working out.
I can tell. The muscle between your ears is bigger than ever.
Okay, time out. I'm seeing spots.
When I'm done, you'll be seeing more than that. Turn around and get your claws up in the air, Carmen.
Sheesh. All this yelling's putting me back inside my shell.
This is how we roll.
Buddy, watch.
Here we go. This is how we roll.
Okay, that's it. No more Mr. Nice Guy.
Go.
However you want to play it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'm late for school.
I hope you get detention.
He has. If you're not familiar with our love for Carmadillo, you got to listen to some of the episodes in the archive, because we've developed a love for this bang baby that is just a man that was transformed into an anthropomorphic armadillo.
And yeah, it's like there's like water girls and fire guys and mind control and shadow men and stretchy, and then this guy's just an armadillo in pants. And it rules.
It's awesome. And he's got a great theme song, and yeah, he's tremendous.
Absolutely. But we get a brief moment of static. This is why Virgil is late to class on this first day, and as he's dealing with Carmadillo, he does defeat him, but that allows him to be late to school. When he gets there, he sits down by Richie and this new kid in class, Jimmy, who is quickly made the target of these cartoonishly over-the-top bullies who just continually assault him and mess with him and break his things. And it all starts here in this class, and the teacher seems blissfully unaware of it. And that's kind of the theme of the episode, is Virgil feels like he didn't do enough to stop this inciting incident, which, again, we don't technically still know at this point in the episode. But it's clear that this Jimmy kid is going through a tough time. We see after the period is over, we see them outside in front of the school where the bullies are still doing it, and they're attacking him and throwing his book bag on the ground. They break his computer mouse. And Virgil and Richie kind of set out that they're going to try to befriend this kid who's having so much trouble with these bullies at school.
Yeah, and as you mentioned, there's sort of this narration that's going on as Virgil recounts this to the counselor, and he does seem to be getting along the way, seeing the different areas where he could have potentially stopped whatever this unnamed event is. And one of the things that he tries to sort of do is he does step in and attempt to stop this Nick, Kevin, and Ray, the gang of bullies, from physically assaulting and doing things to Jimmy, but they witness him breaking the mouse, his computer mouse. He has an actual physical computer mouse connected to his laptop. So he to make things up, Virgil and Richie show up at Jimmy's house, and they drop off an extra mouse that Virgil took from his sister's computer, as in a way of sort of making a peace offering and to make him feel better. Jimmy invites him in, and we get sort of, there's not a lot of subtext in this episode used. It's very clear they're trying to make you understand just who Jimmy is. He's a very specific type of person.
You should have told me you were inviting friends over.
I didn't know they were coming, Mom.
Well, I'm glad you're here anyway. Help yourselves to a snack. I'll be back. Try not to chase them away, okay?
Come on. My bedroom's this way. Cool room. Did you make all this? Most of it. See this? It's a prop from Star Force. I got it at an online auction. Oh, we've only seen that movie like a bazillion times. Check it, V.
Uh-huh.
I got it on DVD. We could watch it, or I could show you something even cooler. I could show you a real gun.
What?
My dad bought it. For protection. Wanna see?
No! I hate guns! My mom was killed by one. It was an accident, but listen, I gotta go. See you tomorrow at school, okay? Come on, Rich.
Bad idea, man.
What can I tell you? I freaked. The last thing I wanted to see was his dad's stupid gun.
So yeah, it's very clear that he's got sort of like, I don't know, like hard rock stickers on his computer, and there's like skeletons and skulls. And later on, they mention that he really took delight in some of the Halloween decorations and stuff like that. So they're really trying to personify this guy as like your typical bullied student that sort of is a little idiosyncratic and perhaps into some darker things, but they really do their best to make sure that you're noticing everything. Even his room that they go into with Jimmy and Virgil and Richie all going to visit is completely dark. He's got like black lights in his room that light up these fantastic posters, and he's super excited to show them this model gun from Star Force. Speaking of May the 4th, may the force be with you from Star Force. But he's super excited to show them this model that he has of a gun from Star Force, and that you know, he mentions that he has it on DVD and he's getting real excited about it. And Virgil is sort of spacing out, looking at this lava lamp that he has in his room, and that's when Jimmy maybe panics a little bit and realizes that there might be some disinterest. So he just tries to get their attention and offers to show them a real gun, and that you know, mentions that his dad bought it for self-protection and has it in the house. And Virgil flips out immediately, noting that he hates guns. His mom was killed by a gun. He doesn't want anything to do with guns. So he encourages Richie to leave with him. So they both leave. And Richie makes a comment that it was a bad decision to suggest that to Jimmy, and walks out with Virgil. So we recognize in this moment kind of what we're seeing here is that he's maybe just socially awkward. He doesn't quite understand because he doesn't have a lot of friends how to be a friend. So unfortunately that continues to play out in his friendships. But we kind of fast forward a little bit. Virgil mentions that Jimmy continued to hang out with them a little bit, but mostly just at the community center that Virgil's dad owns. And that's when we find out that it's around Halloween time because they decide to set up a haunted house at the community center. So they spend the next several, we get a montage over the next several scenes of the kids all from the school setting up the various different decorations. Jimmy's quite talented, but also sort of hangs out by himself when he's setting up the decorations and sets up some rather dark and morbid looking decorations all on his own. But the kids seem to be impressed about it. But of course, it isn't just Jimmy who's setting up the decorations, as we learn that bully 34-year-old man that goes to Virgil's high school, Nick, also is there setting up decorations, and he begins to close in on Jimmy and looks for an opportunity to do whatever he can to try and make Jimmy's life a living hell. And at the same time, he's trying to flirt with Frida, whose idea it was to set up this haunted house, and sort of noted that Jimmy appears to have some sort of crush on Frida as well. Mm-hmm. And it's pretty clear that Frida doesn't necessarily reciprocate it, but she's also not interested in Nick, who's kind of being the suave jock attempting to coax her into going out with him after the celebration and after the haunted house wraps up. She does make it very clear she's not interested in Nick, and she's also not interested in Jimmy as well. That's when Nick notices that Jimmy is standing by looking a little bit upset.
Can't believe you want to hang with all those losers. And Osgood's the king of them all.
He's okay. Maybe a little shy.
Well, I'm not shy. How'd you like to go out after Fright Fest tomorrow?
Well, we're all sort of going out together at Burger Fool.
You and Osgood, huh?
What?
Yeah, I hear you and he are like best friends.
No.
Hey, if you like the guy, what can I say?
I am not interested in Jimmy Osgood.
Oh. Hey! How long you been listening, you little creep?
Nick! Nick! Stop!
And that's Nick and his two goon buddies chase Jimmy into the maze that they've set up. They set up a giant maze in the midst of this community center as part of the haunted house, chase him in and through it, literally making him run through one of the walls, and then force him and lock him into a locker in the gym changing room. So clearly some classic high school bullying going on here, and Jimmy is left in tears. Virgil and Richie do rescue him from being trapped inside the locker, but it's very clear that this was not a pleasant experience for him. So it's at that point that we flash forward to post the celebration for the haunted house, and as they decide that they're going to take things down from the community center, begin taking down all the decorations. It's also going to be a group effort. Nick is once again back at the community center, gleefully helping destroy all of the decorations that they put together. And it's Virgil decides he's going to head over to Jimmy's house to pick him up to go over to the community center. And that's when he discovers something rather disturbing on Jimmy's computer.
That's right. So we find what is, for lack of a better term, a manifesto from Jimmy as he sort of recounts the events of these bullies. He said, it was all I wanted to be was to be left alone, but they couldn't even do that. They had to hurt me. They had to harass me. And now he says he's going to settle it once and for all. Virgil runs and grabs both Jimmy's father and his own. And they sort of shows him the manifesto, and then Virgil remembers that Jimmy had mentioned something about knowing where a gun was, and his father is insistent that that's impossible, that he keeps it locked up, but as he goes and checks his key ring, he sees that his key for the drawer where he keeps the gun is missing.
I'm afraid he's gonna hurt somebody.
He'd never do that. He doesn't mean it.
Your son's depressed, Mr. Osgood. I work with kids, and I can tell you can't dismiss this. He needs help.
Pops, Jimmy told me he knew where he could get a gun.
My gun's locked up. I have the key. Oh, my God. It's gone. The gun's gone.
What were you thinking, having a handgun in the house where a kid could get to it?
But I didn't know Jimmy would even think of...
Pops, those kids who were hassling Jimmy, they might be down at the community center.
I gotta get down there. Call the police. Have them send a car down there now.
Pops, wait for me.
No, you go home. Jimmy's dad and I'll handle this.
I could see he wasn't in the mood for debate. Still, I had to do something.
And the gun is gone. We get a little bit of a lecture from Virgil's father telling Jimmy's dad, you know, how could you leave a gun where your kid could get it? But they have to rush into action. Virgil's father rushes to the community center, tells Virgil to stay behind, which, of course, allows Virgil to change into Static. And we cut back there where we see Jimmy arriving at the community center. He approaches his bullies. They have this argument, and he does, in fact, pull a gun on them. And, you know, he kind of reiterates that he just wanted to be left alone and that he's... And that he just, you know, wanted to have some friends, wanted to be a part of this, and feels like he's been pushed to his wit's end. And the bully tries to apologize to no good. And Richie sort of tries to step in between them, tries to reason with Jimmy.
What's that? A gun. Okay, put it down. That's not funny.
Lots of things aren't funny. Breaking my computer wasn't funny. Shoving me in the locker wasn't funny.
Jimmy, you're right. I'm sorry, man.
No, you're not.
Jimmy, don't. He's not worth it.
She's right, man. You're all upset about this now, but next week, it won't even matter. Don't mess up your whole life over this.
Get him!
Whatever, you know, whatever has been done to you, it's not worth ruining your life over. It's not worth hurting someone over. You need to put the gun down. And it seems as if Richie has gotten through to Jimmy. But right then, the two other two boys, they have names, but it's not made clear which one is which, decide they're going to try to jump Jimmy and get the gun away from him, which, of course, causes the gun to go off. And instead of the bully, it's Richie who is shot in the leg, and he offers the very edutainment line of "It's not like it is on TV; it really hurts."
Mm-hmm.
And we see Static arrive right in that moment. Too late to stop it. He gets rid of the gun, and we see Virgil. And then we cut back to present day, as Virgil once again kind of is still talking to the psychologist, is still feeling very guilty for not getting there in time to stop it, and for not perhaps doing something before the events that took place, where he feels like maybe he could have gone to an adult, he could have gone, could have been a better friend to Jimmy. But because he didn't step in at the right time, he feels somewhat responsible. And of course, you have the added layer, which of course he can't tell the psychiatrist, which is that he's also a superhero. And he just got there too late to stop the gun from going off. So there's a lot of guilt there as the psychiatrist tries to ease him a little bit and let him know that he feels everything he's feeling is natural, and that there needs to be and that what he's feeling is healthy, and that he just needs to learn from this and try to remember that it's never too late to make a difference in someone's life. So we see another brief scene of Virgil and Frida talking in the lobby as they discuss that Jimmy will be going off to get counseling of his own, and that they don't feel he deserves to go to prison or juvie for this, as he was sort of just pushed to his wit's end and clearly had mental health issues of his own. But as we see, we also see the bully being let out by his parents, And it's sort of a, it's a, kind of a downer note, and to end the episode, as it's just a bit of a sad day. But we do see that that Richie is back at school. He avoided any serious injuries from the bullet wound, and they actually see another kid being bullied, and this time Virgil is a bit more proactive about going up and helping him. And that's kind of where we end, except when we come back from our final break, we have a literal PSA, a literal G.I. Joe PSA, mm-hmm. where Static looks into the camera and reads us some statistics about gun violence, and tells all the kids watching, you gotta go tell a parent or an adult that you trust. And if anyone tries to show you a gun or pulls a gun, that you need to get out of the situation as quickly and safely as possible. And then he literally flies off into the sunset. And that's where we end our episode.
That's right. I think we neglected to mention this at the beginning, but this episode is award-winning, by the way. It mm-hmm. won the 2003 Humanitas Prize in Children's Animation for the episode. But I think going into this, I kind of had the mindset that it was going to be, I don't want to say laughable, because again, it's a real serious topic, mm-hmm. but I think we've all seen an episode of animation that is edutainment, and it's really not what we're used to when it comes to the DCAU. So that means mm-hmm. I think they really stick out a little bit more, and you know, through an adult's eyes who's reviewing these episodes, it's easier to sort of roll your eyes and go, oh, this is ridiculous or whatever. Sure. I don't want to take that away from the episode. I think that for what was done by Mr. Burnett and Mr. McDuffie, who wrote the episode, and I think it's a valiant effort to take a piece like this that you know is edutainment and at least do your best to put an entertaining storytelling perspective on it. I like that he was recounting it as opposed to us reliving it in real time. I thought mm-hmm. that the narration at least provided a little bit more. It didn't require all the characters to give you all of this information through exposition, right? There was one or two times. One time is when the therapist randomly spouts off the top of her head gun violence statistics, where mm-hmm. I was a little bit like, all right, whatever. that's a little ridiculous. But I think so much of the episode shows rather than speaks at the audience.
Yeah.
With the exception of maybe that portion and certainly the breaking of the fourth wall at the end, that I think it is a very effective way of explaining what they were trying to get across. So I don't think, clearly this is an episode that's not, it would not fall into that category of like, oh, this appeals to anyone at any age. Like, this is very much a children's piece of mm-hmm. animation of, you know, stop, drop, and roll, or, you know, call, you know, it, you know, don't talk to strangers, don't speak to people that are offering you candy in a van, like all of like whatever edutainment you can think of when it comes to like these lessons that obviously are important to share with children. But I do think that a valiant effort was made, and maybe it speaks to the talent level behind the pencils of writing this episode. I think that probably should be the main focus here. Obviously, Alan Burnett, incredible writer, Dwayne McDuffie, incredible writer, put the two of them together, and they came up with a way to express what they were looking to express about the dangers and concerns and things that really clearly are important for them to focus on and get and share with the children that are watching the episode in a way that didn't just feel like a 22 minute, you know, preaching infomercial about don't touch guns, kids. That's why, you know, right. it is somewhat entertaining in that form or fashion. So, those were my general thoughts there. What about you?
Yeah, I was more impressed with this from a narrative perspective than I think I expected. I do agree that the having Virgil sort of narrate it as a story that's already happened was a really good idea, as far as laying it out without having to have a ton of expositional dialogue in each scene. Mm-hmm. I think that was a really good idea. And yeah, I think, like I said, there's parts of this, like the bullies are so cartoonishly evil to this kid. Mm-hmm. And like, don't get me wrong, I understand, mm-hmm. you know, everyone deals with bullying at some point in their lives, especially as kids and teenagers. And I understand kids can be very cruel, but they're not like 1980s Revenge of the Nerd bullies.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
that kind of takes me on it. But I also understand that, like, this isn't you for, as you said, this is at its heart, it's a show for children, especially this episode. It was produced around the time of the Columbine shooting, mm-hmm. Which is not funny, haha, but our friends at Watchtower Database just recently put out a video on the edited version of the Batman Beyond Return of the Joker movie and how that had always had this sort of old wives tale that the Columbine shooting is why the movie got edited so heavily, which as it turns out is likely not the case, but there was that still definitely had an effect on children's programming
for sure,
especially on Kids WB at the time, and seems to have been. I know there's an interview with Dwayne McDuffie that speaks about it, as well as the episode's director. So yeah, I know this is I know you needed this to be for children, and you didn't, there couldn't be ambiguity. Mm-hmm. And but I do also, there's always that part of me that goes, you know, a lot of people get bullied at school, not all of them bring a gun to school. And sure. I'm not saying they should have blamed this kid that's being horrifically bullied, but, and they do kind of talk about that. There's a moment where Virgil's dad is talking to Jimmy's dad, and Jimmy's dad's like, oh well, he would never do something like this. I mean, he's not like that. And mm-hmm. and Virgil's father just goes, your son is depressed, like your son has an issue mm-hmm. that is not being attended. And I appreciated that. Mm-hmm. Because yes, they, you know, yes, he's being bullied, yes, he's being harassed in a very over the top way, but they do also point out that he doesn't look to have like a horrific home life. They don't imply that like his parents beat him or anything, or
right.
that he's, you know, that they even, you know, verbally abuse him, but they right. do sort of establish that they're not necessarily paying the most attention, other than maybe, you know, the line that his mother has about, you know, don't scare these kids away or whatever, which is, mm-hmm. you know, a crappy thing for a parent to say right. to your child who isn't good at making friends. But so I appreciated that side of it as well, that they did touch on it, especially this early on in, you know, obviously mental health and things like that, I think are spoken about a bit more freely now, but I appreciated that they did bring up that part, and they kind of hit that beyond these bullies going after Jimmy, that he clearly also has other, you know, other mental health issues that are affecting him leading up to this, and that it's these events are kind of just what breaks the camel, you know, the straw that breaks the camel's back. So I appreciated that. I appreciated how sort of honest of a discussion that is, and some of the factors that go into a situation like this. It was handled with a bit more nuance, even though, as I said, our antagonists, our bullies, were so over the top on the other side of it. So I just wish maybe you could have toned down the bullies a little bit, because they just don't feel like real people. As you said, it feels like a 30-year-old man from like Greece or something is bullying this.
I was gonna say Archie Comics, so like, yeah, it's very much like, yeah, it is yeah. very much like a cliched, yeah.
Bob's portrayal. Big Boy is talking about it in visuals, but like he's yeah, it's just like this like slick greaser character from the 1940s is bullying this poor kid. And yeah, but I overall I think it is done a lot better than I would have expected, and in the sense of like, you know, he starts to open up a little bit, and he, you know, he overhears a thing that really wasn't meant for him to hear when Frida kind of says she's not interested in him, which makes him feel even more isolated. And then he has this physical violence put against him when the bullies put him in the locker. Like, they do a good job, I think, of raising raising the tension to the point when he comes in with the gun, where it does feel like we've reached this crescendo where he feels like he has no hope. And I also liked seeing Richie, you know, this is pre-gear. Like he's very heroic, but not in a, he doesn't just stand, you know, like Superman in between the right. gun and the guy. Like he's trying to talk to his friend and explain, you know, explain what could happen if he, you know, he talks about, you know, like, this isn't worth ruining your life. It isn't worth hurting someone over, you know, he's trying to speak to him down, even though there's a live gun there, even though it's kind of pointed at him for a moment, he still is trying to reach his friend at that moment. I think that's a good moment for Richie as well. So yeah, I mean, overall, and I, like I said, I think it's an interesting idea, even as Virgil is recounting all of the reasons that he feels guilty for this event happening, he can't openly discuss the static of it.
Right.
Like that he's a superhero who theoretically fights guys with guns all the time.
Right.
And he just gets there 15 seconds too late. Mm-hmm. And like how that would haunt him. Again, we've talked about how much like an early Steve Ditko Spider-Man feel that static has, especially this version of static has at times, mm-hmm. of that the guilt of having these abilities and being the guy who always shows up to save the day, but then your best friend in this case gets hurt and you couldn't do anything to stop it, and the guilt that he would feel on that side of his life. So yeah, I almost wish we could have explored that more, maybe another scene with him and Richie talking or something. But overall, I think they do a pretty solid job. Yes, you have to, like we were saying, it is at the end of the day a somewhat of a public service announcement directed directly at children. You have to have the PSA moments. You have to hammer home that, you know, getting shot is a horrific, violent, terrible thing. So that those sorts of things that make the dialogue feel a little clunky, you kind of forgive, because you can't have ambiguity in that part and the children's cartoon. I understand that. Mm-hmm. So for that reason, I end up coming to a 7 out of 10 for my plot score.
Yeah, I gave it the same exact score, which, you know, we've already stated they did. I think they exceeded expectations, which is why I ended up giving it a higher score. I think there are parts of it, yes, that are over the top or eye rolling or are extremely unrealistic for what the scenario may look like in real life, but it's entertaining. And I think some of the I really applaud some of the choices that were done, like the narrative from Virgil's perspective. And you know, it's interesting that we both gave it such relatively high marks based on the fact there's not a lot of static in the episode and there's almost mm-hmm. zero action. Like it is very much, other than our little Carmandillo introduction and then static mm-hmm. obviously showing up late at the end, if you want to call Richie getting shot action, like there is very little static in the episode. So yeah, it's interesting that we still ended up giving it both high marks, but yeah, I think it just speaks to the writing from Mr. Burnett and the late great Mr. McDuffie. They were masters of their craft, and you know, were able to put something, to take a perhaps tired and cliched format and at least give it a somewhat entertaining spin that we both appreciated, clearly.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, animation and visuals. And I believe it looks like Tama Production Co. was responsible for our animation this week. I am excited to see season 1 and 2 designs with cell shading. Like this was felt like an episode that they decided, and technically in season 2 here, and the full episode was cell shaded, very much looking much more like the season 3 designs and artwork that we would be used to. So that stood out right away as we see you know, these classic season 1 and 2 designs, but you get the more professional, I'd say, higher maybe a higher budget looking looking production out of our animation team here. I wonder if it was because the episode, they kind of knew that they wanted this to be considered for some sort of award, so that they wanted it to look a little bit more, professional than the first two seasons with the lower budget, or if this was just in preparation for our transformation into season 3 and 4, kind of fitting it more into the DCAU.
Yeah, there's a couple other of these later season 2 episodes where it looks like they started to adapt, even though they hadn't changed the costumes yet, where they've kind of just slightly redesigned. It's kind of like, I would liken it to maybe the back, 15 or 20 episodes of Batman the Animated Series, where we're not nearly to the new Batman Adventures look yet, where everything's really changed up, but it's definitely sort of at this halfway point where we've started to add a little bit more, like you said, the cell shading and more contrasts in the colors and things like that, as opposed to the very flat way that it's colored all throughout season 1 and the most of season 2 from my memory. So mm-hmm. Yeah, that's definitely a welcome change. Time of production, I think we've covered, I think all of their episodes are season 2 episodes. Technically, I think one is it aired in season 3, but it was produced for season 2. Mm-hmm. Everybody, as mentioned, like I already kind of tipped my hat, like our main bully is so, his face is so round. and he's just so
he's got sideburns.
Yes. He's just so he's just such a slick, yeah, like I said, he's like a greaser, like somebody from you hit Archie Comics. I was like, yeah, or like it's like somebody that would be like a guy John Travolta fights in Grease or something. Like it's a very weird throwback design. It's like, I understand this school probably doesn't have a dress code, but are you allowed to just like walk around in a wife beater? At a public school? I don't know. Maybe you are.
Yeah, you would think you would probably not be allowed to do that. But I think to your point that you made initially, they left no ambiguity about who this, the status of this character, whether he was a good guy or a bad guy. Like, all right, he's got all the trademarks. He's got dark hair. He's got this scowl on his face. He laughs. He knocks the books out of people's hands. He's pulling, he's just messing with our character Jimmy here, doing everything he can to be mean to him. So let's also make him look as mean as we possibly can also. And that just sort of fits, I guess, as a hitman for the mob in a gangster movie. I don't know.
I guess so. Yeah, it's a very odd design, but yeah, that was kind of what I focused in on. It's like, I feel like everybody's face, Jimmy, kind of the same way. Everybody has a very round face in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I don't know if that comes down to who worked on it as storyboards or the animation itself, but it has a unique look. Like you said, there's not much action, so it's kind of hard to gauge this. I do think that, the scene when Jimmy pulls the gun is pretty, it feels very dramatic.
Absolutely
has a lot of weight to it. Obviously there's tears streaming down Jimmy's face at one point. They do a very interesting thing where he's got the gun pointed at, what is this bully's name?
Nick Connor.
That's right, Nick. And then when Richie walks up to try to intervene, they kind of do this little pan rather than a cut, where they sort of switch it to keep Jimmy in the center of the frame as Richie kind of walks in. They do this kind of cool panning thing as well to kind of really keep ratcheting that tension up. They try to do like some slow motion stuff when the gun is going off.
Hated that.
Does not look good. Does not look. And we've talked about that before. Slow motion and animation. Maybe even been something we've talked about with Kevin Altieri or somebody before. I understand slow motion and 2D animation is really hard to pull off, to my understanding.
Mm-hmm.
But boy, this is not the studio that could pull this trick off. Like, it almost would have been better to do like just still images or something,
or multiple shots of the gun going off or something like that. Mm-hmm. Or the whatever. Yeah.
Or you just see like cuts, like the gun cut, the gun fires like, and the screen just goes white. And then you cut to Richie on the ground or something. Like,
yeah, it was not good.
Yeah. So that's a little rough. But overall, like I said, I think that scene, the scene where they throw him in the locker, is also very visceral, and I think has a lot of weight to it there as well. So they do some good of those, some of those human drama moments, I think, are handled very well. And then on the other side, you're like, well, maybe it's good that they didn't have a a high action episode here. I do like the bit at the start when he's fighting Carmandillo and he makes like an electricity ramp thing, like a little Hot Wheels ramp, and he like Carmandillo rolls up it and then goes flying back the other way. Like, I think that's kind of a neat trick with Static's ever, you know, his, as we've talked about, his powers are just kind of whatever the writers need him to do in that moment. So
hang some bats on the ceiling, that electricity will do that too.
So the way he kind of makes his weird little ramp to throw off Carmandillo is a lot of fun. So yeah, I think it's there's some bright spots, but like I said, there's some the character designs I didn't love, and like I said, that ending with the slow-mo kind of put it off. So I ended up settling on a 6 out of 10 for my visuals.
Yeah, I went just one point higher. I do think that they sort of kind of cheated in that they didn't have much action to to animate. It is a lot of characters walking around. There's not a lot of punching or kicking or visualization of Static in the episode, as we mentioned, so you don't have his powers being manifested very often. But I do think that they did a good job of communicating the intensity. Like I said, it's very visual in the way that they communicate who Jimmy is. Everything points to the fact that he's a loner. He's, you know, he's sort of a social outcast. It's difficult for him to make friends. He's not good at sports. Like, all of that is communicated through the visual of what they, of how they, you know, his personification. And I thought that that was communicated very well through that. I think the 3D pan with the gun and him holding the gun with these tears, you know, pouring down his cheeks, and the gun in his hand is also, you know, he's shaking, and as he's sort of holding the gun and pointing it, and like it was a good translation for something that you would have seen in like an 80s kids movie or something. Like that's exactly what you would have seen, like the tears and the hand shaking and the cut back and forth. And there were certainly a couple of missteps, yeah, for sure, with the way that the slow motion was done, as we mentioned. Yeah, probably would have left that out. But yeah, overall, I like seeing cell shading and things looking a little bit more closer to what we would expect for the rest of the show to look like, especially with it being grafted into the DCAU starting in that very next season. So yeah, I really did appreciate a lot of the way that things were set up, character designs and maybe crappy slow-mo notwithstanding. So gave it a 7 out of 10 on my end.
Nice.
All right, Liam, let's move on to our next category, which is going to be music. And Richard Wolf, once again, responsible for our music this week. Not that one. not the Law and Order Richard Wolf, but the Richard Wolfy Wolf of the Static Shock fame. I did note Carmandillo's theme came back. This is How We Roll. We got that one.
Love it.
We get a couple of the, what I think we've dubbed as like the Rage Against the Machine style songs, where it's clearly like guitar driven. Somebody's like not quite rapping, but like screaming at the, in an angry manner, was sort of what Jimmy's theme song was once they discovered his manifesto. So that sort of played into it as Static and is sort of rushing to get to the school. And then after he shows up to the school, you know, I think there's some of the reused musical pieces in the bullying scenes that those sounded pretty familiar when they cut to the community center, and they're kind of the montage of them putting up all of the decorations and stuff like that. Didn't even talk about the cool little decorations that Jimmy got to put, create design. Those were
great work from the background.
Yeah, those are pretty awesome. But I think that my base level, as we know, for Static is a 5, with all music is a 5. Static tends to get lower scores because I don't typically like music that has words, but I love Carmandillo's theme, so I ended up giving this a 6 out of 10. So give me all of the Carmandillo, both now and forevermore, please.
Absolutely. He is the best. But yeah, no, I actually gave it the same score, 6 out of 10. I love the Carmandillo theme. I also really like at the very end, as is often the case when Static shows up, they bring in the Static theme, but they play it very sort of solemnly when he gets there and he sees that when he's being chased by the bullies. That was a little bit distracting for me in this case, just because this is such a serious topic. But overall, I still think it's really solid, so I went with the 6 as well.
All right, man, let's wrap things up with our final category of the week, and that is, of course, going to be voice acting. We have several series regulars here to chat about, and a rather large cast overall, because we have some brand new bullies that were introduced. Obviously, Jimmy, a brand new character, and a couple of supporting characters also involved. Let's go ahead and talk about this week's voice cast.
That is right. So we have we do have Danica McKellar as Frida returning. We have Lorraine Toussaint playing Dr. Franklin, the school psychiatrist. Probably would know her best from, she has a role in Orange is the New Black. Playing Ray, we have Chad Gabriel, and playing Kevin, who are the two cronies, is James Croman. And then, of course, we have Mikey Kelly voicing Nick. Like I said, it's not their fault. They're doing what's asked of them, but they are, in a pejorative way, they're just so over the top and cartoony in what is supposed to be such a serious episode. I don't blame them, but it's not great.
Yeah, not. They just sound like adult men. Like that's the other thing, is that they just don't, it doesn't come across as teenage boys. Also, there was a guy in the background that walked past. There's a guy in the background that walks past who's clearly a student at the high school, and he's got a full goatee. Like, I know puberty hits people, but this guy has like a thick, like well filled in goatee. And I was just like, I think they used the wrong character model there. Anyway, back to the voices.
That's right. And speaking of Jimmy, we have Richard Horvitz playing Jimmy, who actually is a really, I would say, really memorable and familiar voice actor, probably best known for playing, he plays Zim on Invader Zim, and more relevant to my own personal enjoyment of cartoons as a child, he was Billy on The Grim Adventures of Billy and Mandy, which was a favorite of mine. as a youngster, that's kind of right in my Cartoon Network wheelhouse. So yeah, he does a great job, because I wouldn't have guessed that the characters that I am used to this guy playing are so like shrieking, over the top, you know, cartoony. And
yeah,
he really plays it simple. He plays like the quiet kid really well, who has this little bit of an edge to him, like when he's trying to show them the gun and Virgil runs out of the house, and then the end there when he has to sort of be the, you know, driven to his breaking point and he's pulling the gun. He does a really, really good job in this episode, and again, I wish the bullies weren't so over the top, because I think he does a really, as grounded as a story like this, which is again is a story about gun violence for children, can be, I think he does a really good job of grounding it and making you feel like this is a real person going through this.
No, absolutely. I was equally impressed, because he does have to go through this roller coaster a bit. Like there is a lot again that I said that is communicated visually by the way that they personify the character, but I think that him having to sort of communicate that he's withdrawn, that he's sad, that he's sort of depressed, that he just wants to be left alone, that he's frustrated, depressed, all of that. And then like the little moments where he gets super excited that he has people in his room to kind of share this stuff, and he seems like he's kind of making headway, and then to equally sort of then be frustrated as that sort of falls apart. And then those moments where he's absolutely terrified when he gets shoved into the locker, or or the mix of anger and fear that he has when he's yelling, you know, at Nick at the end, like, you're not sorry. You're not, don't apologize. You're not sorry. Like, mm-hmm. all of that communicated very well. Yeah. Not surprising that he had some major roles, but as you mentioned, those roles very, very different from this. So, I think even more outstanding, with his performance.
Absolutely. And then, of course, we do have Kevin Michael Richardson as Robert, Virgil's dad. Small role, but again, I thought he does a good job of authoritatively speaking on these subjects. They mentioned a couple times he's a guidance counselor. He's worked with kids, so it makes sense that he knows the signs. Maybe he's never dealt with a school shooter before, but like when he's talking to Jimmy's father and everything, he feels like the guy you want, like if you want an adult in the room at this point, it's him. Mm-hmm. I think he does a really good job. And then, yeah, our two leads of Jason Marsden and Phil LaMarr as Richie and Virgil. Yeah, obviously we talk about Phil LaMarr all the time for good reason, because he's so darn talented. He gets extra heavy lifting to do, not only being the main character, but also narrating the whole thing. And like we said, I think that's one of the keys to making this episode work, is allowing Virgil to narrate, so you don't have to get scenes full of exposition about who Jimmy is and what he's like and what these bullies are doing and all of these things. And like using that and trusting him to be able to kind of carry the episode in that way, in a different way than he normally might have to carry an episode as the main character, is really impressive.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, between we laud Mr. LaMarr at every chance we get to. Mm-hmm. You know, he's fantastic. I think this is a different style of writing, again, as we've mentioned, than we're used to. There's very few episodes, I think we've remarked every time we've have done an episode that sort of has this sort of perspective, but the narrative perspective where a character is narrating the story was not something that was typically done in the DCAU. So when those episodes sort of come up, I think it does cause them to stand out. But also I think the obviously the one that comes to mind is the late Mr. Kent, where you have mm-hmm. you know, a tremendous voice actor in leading our voice cast for that one, with Superman being the person that's responsible for the narration, with Tim Daly. So of course it's going to require somebody that has a lot of skill and has the ability to sort of narrate in character, I'd say. And Mr. LaMarr, of course, knocks it out of the park. So I think even more so than just the normal, yeah, it's a great, you know, he does a great job, or it's outside of the box of what's normally done for the show. So mm-hmm. I think there's even more for him to carry for the episode. And I think the most unsurprising part is that he excels at it. I think Jason Marsden's turn as Richie, again, I think it really shines in that final scene with the gun. And, you know, certainly, as you mentioned, that sort of personification that he has a hero inside of him, even though he hasn't quite, advanced to that heroic personification just yet. Like he's not a hero on paper. He's sort of a hero in spirit here, but, yeah. Great job, very unsurprisingly, by both of our leads here.
Absolutely. So, yeah, for that reason, is that I think it's a very strong cast, but the bullies brought it down a little bit, but still, I ended up with a pretty strong 8 out of 10 for my voice acting score.
Nice. I went just one tick lower. I do think that that the bullies being the bullies sort of took things away a little bit. I do think that... Maybe the therapist spouting of crime statistics took things down a little bit, because it did sound like she was reading from a cue card or from a script when she was spouting those off. But yeah, overall, still pretty strong scores from both of us when it comes to the voice acting for this week.
Absolutely.
All right, Liam, let's total things up here at the end, and totaling up my scores, I come up with a fairly decent, and I think at least for this episode, I would say this is a huge win based on what I expected coming into the episode. I end up giving it a 27 out of 40. What about you?
Yeah, and even though we didn't agree in every individual category, we ended up coming to the exact same final score, as I also have a 27 out of 40.
There we go. All right, Liam. So let's go ahead here and talk a little bit about rewatchability, shall we? I think, so when you look at the things that we talk about with rewatchability, it doesn't really affect the rest of the show. I don't even know. Does Richie ever mention that he got shot? Is that ever brought up again?
That I'm aware of.
Yeah, so it's not like Richie walks with a limp going forward. This isn't like the catalyst that turns him into a supporting superhero for the rest of the show. So as far as like major impact, it does have a Carmandillo appearance. So I guess you could say you want to watch all the Carmandillo. We find him to be very important. Yes, exactly. We are very big fans of him. So must watch TV from us, but in the grand scheme of things, not a huge episode. However, I think because this is kind of an example of how, like, this would be how I, if somebody came to me, obviously they wouldn't, but if they came to me and were like, how would I write a edutainment episode that isn't just a carbon copy of G.I. Joe PSAs from the 80s? I would say, you might want to do research on this episode, because this, very much like the episode that we had with a friend of the show, Len Yule, talked about when we interviewed him, but Frozen Out, you know, the Sons of the Father episode that dealt with, you know, Richie's dad being a racist. I think there is some nuance to the way that the writers chose to do things. And I think that this is an example of an ability to at least in part communicate a theme that you're trying to get across to your viewer without talking down or at them. I could have done without the full PSA at the end, but maybe that was something that was mandated, or that was just something that the writers felt that needed to be completely laid out and or needed to be done in order for them to be nominated for an award or something like that. I don't know. But the fact that this is an award-winning episode, it would be hard for me to say it's a complete skip. So I'll give it a one thumb up.
Yeah, I think it is. It's one of those episodes where I think a lot of people, we always talk about that, about how certain episodes just get brought up when we message, you know, when we put something on our socials that we're doing static. This is always one of those episodes that gets brought up as one that people really remember, that really sticks with people. Mm-hmm. So, and especially again, yeah, I can definitely see this. I to my knowledge, I had seen this once, and I'm not even sure I had seen the full episode. Mm-hmm. And that the scene of Richie getting shot was still very, I remembered that very well. So mm-hmm. It definitely, you know, made an impression on me as a kid, even if I didn't necessarily appreciate the idea that I was being sort of edutainmented, as we said. So yeah, I think this one deserves at least one thumb up for that reason. And it's, you know, I think it's, like we said, there is more to this. This could have been really just spouting statistics and all of that. And they managed to weave a really, you know, a really dramatic and interesting story in the middle of the still very clear and very focused message of, you know, what kids should do if there's, you know, potential gun violence that you've, or, you know, or even just a kid that's being, you know, bullied very, very badly in school. So yeah, they tightrope that line really impressively.
There we go. All right, Liam, let's begin to wrap things up for this week. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in. Now's the time where we talk about ways to support the podcast. So as we mentioned at the top, you subscribe to us on your favorite podcast app, whether that's Spotify or Apple Podcasts or YouTube. I believe all Google Podcasts soon will be migrated over there, RIP Google Podcasts. Mm-hmm. But if you listen to us on one of them, go ahead and follow us or subscribe to us. Leave a 5-star review if you listen on Spotify or on or on Apple Podcasts, or like the video if you're listening to us on YouTube. And then if you leave a little blurb, as we mentioned, on Apple Podcasts, and we read it on the air, and you live within the continental United States, we'll send you a little thank you gift just for doing so. So that's encouragement to do so. We've given sent several gifts out, thank you gifts out to listeners that have done that. So, and it works. We learned that it helps the algorithm move along and get new listeners to listen to the pod. So ultimately, we would do this for an audience of one, but we certainly like the interaction and the idea that our podcast is being listened to people by people. So certainly do your part if you want to support the podcast and do that. You can also check out the show notes, as there will be a link to our store. You can pick up a piece of merchandise, or you can support us monetarily. There's a donate button. We have a couple of people that support us monthly with their hard-earned dollars, and it is greatly appreciated. It helps us pay for things like the Zoom calls and the late night coffees that we have to do in order to record the podcast. So thank you to our monthly supporters that send us their hard-earned dollars as a way to say thank you. Liam, we will be continuing here in the month of February with more static next week. And of course, if you're interested in finding out what the next episodes will be covering, or maybe some tidbits about that, you can follow us on social medias at DCAU Review, both on formerly Twitter, now X, and of course on Instagram. Do you got any ideas about what we'll be covering next week?
Yeah, so we will be, as mentioned, we have just wrapped our final season 2 episode. So we will be spending the rest of our time with Static in seasons 3 and 4. So we'll be heading into season 3 next week with a review of the episode The Usual Suspect. There's a mysterious bang baby that's attacking a certain student's enemies. And well, that's quite convenient, isn't it? So we'll have to see if they're... there is some correlation between why that's happening next week.
Methinks there might be a connection there. So looking forward to checking that one out with you. But until then, I'm Cal.
And I'm Liam.
And we will talk to you on the next episode of the DCAU Review.
Bye-bye.